master's degree in physiology, biomechanics, and human nutrition. I've spent the past two decades competing in some of the most masochistic events on the planet, from SEALFIT Kokoro, Spartan Agoji, and the world's toughest mudder, to 13 Ironman triathlons, brutal bow hunts, adventure races, spearfishing, plant foraging, freediving, bodybuilding, and beyond. I combine this intense time in the trenches with a blend of ancestral wisdom and modern science, search the globe for the world's top experts in performance, fat loss, recovery, gut, hormones, brain, beauty, and brawn to deliver you this podcast. Everything you need to know to live an adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. My name is Ben Greenfield. Enjoy the ride. Welcome. Today's show is going to be good. It is going to be good. It's with my friend, Dr. Matt Cook, who came up to my house in Spokane, and we recorded a really great podcast. You're going to absolutely love this one if you listen to part one with Matt Cook. Perhaps your mind was blown by his knowledge of regenerative medicine and his blend of ancestral wisdom and modern science. You're certainly going to absolutely dig this one. Guaranteed. I don't know why I'm talking like a redneck. All right, let's jump in with Matt.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a Rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com.
So about, I guess it was probably even less than a month ago, I was down in San Jose. I was at the office of Dr. Matthew Cook, BioReset Medical down there, and we recorded, based on the feedback I got, I think one of the more mind-blowing podcast episodes of 2018 when it comes to cutting-edge medicine, rehabilitating the body, recovery, and the thing that happened, though, as we recorded that podcast episode at Dr. Cook's clinic in San Jose, is we didn't even touch on, like, half the stuff that we actually wanted to get into, from like plasmapheresis to hyperthermia to a huge amount on cannabinoids, THC, CBD, and far beyond. We talked about ketamine. We talked about, you know, strange uses of nootropics like methylene blue. We began to touch on Lyme, but really didn't unpack it much. And his knowledge of Lyme and how to treat it properly and how to fix it is massive. Biohacking pain. If you didn't hear that initial podcast episode, it's not a required prereq for what you're about to hear, but you definitely want to listen to this as a two-parter for sure. So what I'm going to do is I'll link to that initial episode. If you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/bioreset2, that's BioReset the number 2. That's where the show notes for everything that we discuss during this episode will be. And I tend to take copious show notes. And there, I got the word copious out of my system early in today's show when I'm interviewing Matt. And so I'll put all of the all the show notes over there at bengreenfieldfitness.com/BioReset2. Last night, a couple came knocking at my door, trudging up through the snowy driveway, and it was actually Dr. Matt Cook and his wonderful assistant, Barb, who oversaw my mind-blowing ketamine therapy that I did down there at Matt Cook's clinic. And they are here at my house. We're sitting down in my office right now, and we've been talking all morning about all the cool things we want to tell you about. So sit back and enjoy part two, brought to you from my turf rather than Matt's turf. But Matt, welcome back for part two, baby.
Oh, thank you so much. It's like a total pleasure being here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you feeling relaxed, restored?
You have the coolest house I've ever been to in my life, and you had I had the best cup of coffee I've ever had, so it's like going pretty well.
It was a good cup of coffee. Matt's coffee this morning, he did my workout with me. We did 3 rounds of 5-minute high intensity intervals on the Aerodyne with body weight exercises in between each. So after the workout, we went trudging outside through the snow in the outdoor cryotherapy to the hot tub, and we jumped in the hot tub, came back inside, and made an amazing blend of mushrooms and coffee and a little bit of stevia, which I understand is from Matt, is one way that you can actually protect yourself against the biofilm in the gut. All sorts of crazy things, but now we're podcasting, so I should quit droning on. We should jump in. If you don't know who Dr. Cook is, you can, of course, listen to the previous podcast episode for the deep dive. But he is the founder of BioReset Medical Corporation, based out of San Jose. They do extremely cutting-edge regenerative medicine, pain medicine, orthopedic medicine. He's a trained anesthesiologist, and at his clinic there does stem cell medicine, nerve hydrodissection, pain management, ultrasound imaging, and a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today. He also trains physicians. If you're a doctor listening in and you want to bring yourself to the next level, I would also recommend you, probably towards the end of the podcast episode, we'll talk a little bit more about how Matt works with physicians too. So we have so many places we could start, but funny story. we were talking, we were actually at A4M, at the anti-aging clinic at A4M, and Barb and I were talking about beta blockers and how, like, athletes, like, I was talking about archery, right, and how you lower your heart rate before archery. Tell me about your experience with beta blockers for situations in this, you know, like this, where you might be anticipatory or nervous about the big show.
Yeah, exactly. It was, I did a, published a paper, in otolaryngology, which is ENT, surgery, when I was in medical school, and I had to give a presentation to about 2,000 doctors, and I'd never given a talk to more than 25 people at that time in my life. And so the attending I was working with said, take one of these and it'll just chill you out and make you feel calm. And it was a beta blocker. And, so I took it. And then I started to feel totally relaxed, and but I was a little lightheaded, and I took my pulse, and my heart rate was about 25. and so
25.
That was
25.
And I could hear my heartbeat every time it beat it as I gave the presentation, but I totally got through it. But that was also the last time I ever took a beta blocker.
Wow. Yeah. I've heard about, like, in the bow hunting industry, people will take these, like, in between, well, they'll take them prior to going out and doing, like, a 3D shoot. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you can literally, like, take a shot. Snipers will use them too, in between heartbeats. Like, your heart goes that slow that you can actually act in between a heartbeat. Like, yeah. 25 is pretty low.
Yeah. And, but, and
what, a beat every 2 seconds.
And so then that's kind of like, that gives you like an indication of how to think about things, because there's a sweet spot for almost everything. And if you start to biohack yourself too high or too low, that's when people run into trouble. And then interestingly, there was a lot of research looking at beta blockers to protect the heart before heart surgery or even big, what are called stressful surgeries, like carotid artery surgery or brain surgery. And so, in my anesthesia career, I actually used beta blockers all the time. So it's kind of kind of interesting.
All right. Well, just in case any of you want to rush out there and try a beta blocker, this is not considered to be medical advice, but it's just interesting. The off-label uses, there's another off-label use I actually want to talk about later on if we get a chance to dive into it. We'll save that for later, because we were actually talking about bigger things in health and longevity during the time when we first met at a dinner in San Jose. And we were talking about, like, you know, the next big things in the health industry, like CBD or keto, or just like this whole obsession with longevity and anti-aging and transhumanism, just the whole industry. But one thing that you mentioned, you know, I asked you, like, what are some cool things that a lot of people don't know about that you think are kind of up and coming in the medical industry? And you talked about something called plasmapheresis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, that's
plasmapheresis.
Perfect.
So thank you. Been practicing. So what is plasmapheresis, and why should people care about that?
So plasmapheresis is a procedure where blood is taken out of the body, and then the blood is separated into the plasma section and then the section that has cells, like white blood cells and red blood cells. And then the cell portion is given back, and the plasma portion is taken out, and then it can be replaced with albumin, which is basically synthetic protein. And there's a couple other things that it can be replaced with as well. But when that happens, it's kind of like getting an oil change in your car, because in the plasma section is where all the antibodies are. So people who are making, let's say, people with autoimmune disease that are making too many antibodies, if you take the plasma section out, then you're cleaning and rinsing it. And then there are also sort of an inflammatory milieu in certain conditions. So we're doing a clinical trial where we're treating people in our office using plasmapheresis, and we're looking at things like neurocognitive and neurodegenerative conditions like Parkinson's and dementia. And then also having a pretty strong focus on autoimmune disease, and then also looking at Lyme disease, which can run the whole gamut in terms of, you know, physiological effects.
So this is different than parabiosis, like taking like the blood of a young human and transferring that into an old human, or the studies they did at Stanford University on longevity. And then I interviewed the guy from the Young Blood Institute, and he's doing some kind of plasma procedure that sounds kind of similar to this, where you're actually, it's almost like recycling your blood, like, no, like getting an oil.
Yeah. So that I'm working with him.
Okay. So this is that procedure.
This is that procedure. Yeah. And so, we're one of many, sites where you can get this done, in the United States. And Mark is just an absolutely fantastic guy. And he's developed a clinical research, tool that allows, physicians like me to start to do clinical research where we design a trial and then, we basically submit it to, an IRB committee where basically super serious scientists look and make sure everything looks good. And then once they give us the okay that it seems like a reasonable thing to do, then we gather data, and as long as the and then we can publish then based on that. And so we're trying to sort of move to the forefront of looking at sort of a lot of these integrative techniques and modalities that have been around for a long time, but then to sort of rigorously look and see how we can treat people with specific conditions.
So what kind of people would actually come in and do something like this?
Most of the people who come in have fairly significant complex illness. And so that's like
Lyme or something.
Lyme or dementia or Parkinson's. And then there's a small cohort of people who are health optimizers who want to come
like
in.
A lot of our listeners are like, well, what kind of do you go
exactly.
for good? Great.
Yeah. So,
what effect would it have on somebody who's already healthy or relatively healthy?
So that's what we're studying. But then another way to think about that is, even if there's someone who's relatively healthy, then try to look under the hood, do a super complex physical exam, do assessment of the labs and inflammatory markers and movement exam, and then try to figure out if sometimes people that are relatively healthy, maybe we find something. And so then we can start to track and see if there's a change. If people do this, we're doing a very robust amount of biomarkers. Like each person that we do has almost like $20,000 worth of biomarkers.
Holy cow.
That we're looking at before and after.
I thought my $1,000 blood test was expensive.
I know. Wow. I know. And so then this is like sort of the Rolls Royce of clinical trials.
Okay.
But then now we're going to actually begin to say these biomarkers are relevant. These are not. If I have people with neurocognitive problems, these biomarkers seem to be more important, whereas in autoimmune disease, those ones aren't that important, or maybe they are. And so then this is what we're trying to find. And so I'm super excited about it.
Very interesting. So that's called plasmapheresis.
That's called plasmapheresis.
How long does something like that take? Like if somebody shows up and they go through all the biomarkers and health screens, once you actually do the protocol, the oil change, so to speak, how long does it take?
It's just only about 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, wow. So yeah. It's just like give the blood, clean it out, put it back in.
But exactly. But then our protocol that we're studying is to do that once a week for 6 weeks. And so we're cleaning a percentage of the blood every week. And so then at the end of 6 weeks, the idea is that you've had a full oil change.
Wow.
And you're ready wow. to go for your second.
Okay. So would you see things like decreased CRP and inflammatory mark? Let's say somebody is healthy already, you know, or would it be like something else?
So that would be a great example. Like you might see a decrease in the CRP. And so then what we're going to do is then, treat people through a short window of time, but then continue to track and test people. And so then we're living in an inflammatory society. And so then we have to start to make better decisions and do stuff like you do here at your house so that right. CRP doesn't creep up. But then we want to be able to see, well, how long is that clinical effect going to last?
Yeah. So in addition to running around outside naked to control inflammation in the snow, you could also go in and just get your blood changed out.
But it's, yeah. I think it's more fun to run outside in the snow naked.
It is. It is. It sounds more fun than a clinical blood exchange, but that's fascinating. So plasmapheresis, the other thing actually, and I named it once already, this idea of like CBD is one of the other kind of growing interests in the health sector. And I know that that's something that you have some experience in as far as looking into kind of going beyond some of these cannabinoids that a lot of people already know a lot about, like THC or CBD. So tell me a little bit about, like, if you use those in your practice or what your thoughts are on cannabinoids in general.
So, you know, physiologically it's interesting because if you think about it, we have cannabinoid receptors in our brain. So there's an entire part of our nervous system that's called the endocannabinoid nervous system. I think that over the next 10 years, we're going to see a huge surge in the use of these natural plant-based compounds to begin to help both health optimizers and then sort of the constellation of people that we end up spending a lot of time with that have real significant problems from chronic depression to chronic illness. When you look, there's compounds called terpenes, there's bioflavonoids, and then there's the actual compounds. And it's the combination of those molecules, and they call the combination of all of those different molecules the entourage effect, because it's a group effect. And so I'm working with this company called Unicorn, and what they've done is they've been able to specifically isolate each one of the compounds, and so then they can put them back together in exact formulations. And so we're going to use the clinical trial platform that Mark has developed and start to then begin to take...
You mean Mark, this guy that runs the Young Blood?
Yeah, Mark Erdahl.
Okay.
And then we're going to take and actually start to do clinical trials where we give specific formulations where... Because the problem with the entire cannabinoid industry is if you had a product and you took it last week and it was too much, and then today it was not enough. And so it's traditionally has not been very standardized.
Yeah. And especially with like edibles and all of these capsules,
exactly.
Like God knows if you're getting 10 milligrams or 5 milligrams, and sometimes that can wind up, you know, when you're at dinner at a restaurant with people and you took some edible and all of a sudden the world is spinning.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a bad sign.
And so then I'm sort of real excited to see what happens when you can dial in an exact, and it's just like, you know, everything that I did in my life, you know, in anesthesia, we're using medications that have a very specific window. If you give too much, you can have a big problem. If you don't give enough, you can also have a big problem.
You have a person getting their knee operated on and they can feel it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're coming into a space where the specificity is I think going to really change the game for a lot of people in terms of, there's so many side effects to traditional sort of medication based approaches to psychiatry and psychology. And I think once we dial in, for example, there's a THC, you know, is the thing that we think of
the
as
more psychoactive component of marijuana.
Exactly. And that's the Delta 9 THC. There's something called Delta 8 THC that has almost all of the benefits that we want from THC. But it has a very mild euphoria. And so Unicorn has one of those too. And so
how would that be different than CBD? Because, you know, CBD is talked about for its anti-anxiety and anti-depression and anti-inflammatory benefits without the psychoactive component of THC. So how would this the Delta 8 THC be different than that?
So the issue is going to be in the entourage effect. So and so they're going to be different but similar. And though sometimes 1 + 1 is going to be 4. And then this is what, and I think as a somebody who's interested in this stuff, the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see more and more companies coming into the space. There's going to be more and more dialability, and then the biohackers out there are going to be able to be testing this stuff, and they're going to come back and they're going to really tell us what's happening.
Interesting. So you could take any given strain and you can isolate, using something like this technology that this company Unicorn is doing, specific parts of that strain, like Delta 8 THC or Delta 9 THC or CBD or any other derivative, and then recombine them into some kind of medication or supplement or treatment that actually gives you the same synergistic effect as the whole plant component. But you can say, hey, we don't want this one to get you high, so we're going to just remove the THC-9, but then you could test that to see if it's as efficacious.
That's perfect. You said that perfectly. And so then the interesting thing is like, you know, the you heard about like the Rick Simpson oil is something that was you sort of famous. Well,
that's the one where you just need like a tiny little grain of rice and it knocks you out for hours and hours and hours.
Exactly. Yeah. And what he did
used
is
that on an airplane once.
He created that because and a lot of people anecdotally have said that it helped them with cancer. And so that was so now you bring up the whole cancer conversation. And so then what my friends at Unicorn did is they figured out how to isolate everything that was in the RSO, the Rick Simpson oil, but dial in specifically so you know what it is and you know exactly what you're getting, and you can dial so you're not going to get knocked out like that.
Right. So it's more precise than just like measuring a little grain of rice approximately.
Exactly.
Depending on your experience with rice on your fingertips.
Exactly.
Sitting back and waiting what happens is funny because I have a little syringe of that that's like my emergency stash. Should I be, again, like traveling internationally and just need to knock myself out on a plane or need to push the reboot button on my circadian rhythm after traveling and, you know, but you're super groggy the next day.
Yeah.
You're completely out of commission. If your house catches on fire, like you're not going to be, you'll be the person getting your ass dragged out of the house.
Yeah.
I have friends who are very experienced with many drugs who I've given that to, and they just, their heads are spinning. You know, one guy in particular was trying to claw off his face at about midnight. So yes, I see the benefit in being able to dial that back. The terpenes you mentioned, when it comes to the terpenes, can you do the same thing with those or the flavonoids or any of these other components?
Yeah. So you do exactly the same thing. And so then like you talk about like a strain. So like people talk about like indica or sativa as being kind of like two of the main strains, and then they have a profile of the effect that they have, and that profile largely is because of the profile of what terpenes are in there.
Interesting.
And
there's like hundreds of terpenes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so you can with this company Unicorn, where are they based out of?
Seattle.
Okay, so that company is now doing this, and will they be able to basically now with this new farm bill that's passed, be able to like grow, produce everything, and can people, once they're starting to produce these, be able to buy them without living in the state of Washington?
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay.
But eventually, I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I see it's only a matter of time before federal legality kicks in. And honestly, it's the whole federal legality thing is kind of a joke right now because people are purchasing in any state they want, carrying to any state they want. And it's, yeah, but for the actual manufacturers. You know, I know people who produce stuff in Seattle and they just can't ship it anywhere.
They
can't ship it, period, but they can at least sell it in Washington state dispensaries. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, this stuff is very helpful medicine, and I see a huge amount of value. So if people wanted to kind of follow what's going on with you, and like a lot of people listen to this podcast and they're either like investors or they're people who just want to keep their finger on the pulse of this stuff. Like, do they have a website or anything like that? This Unicorn company? Do you know?
I think it's unicornbrands.com.
Okay. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes for those of you who are interested in or kind of want to dig into that a little bit more. So just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/bioreset2. bengreenfieldfitness.com/bioreset2. Did you find it, Barb?
Unicorncannabis.net.
Barb is our handy researcher in the background. What's it called? Unicorncannabis.net? Okay, we'll put that in the show notes for you guys who want to keep your finger on the pulse of that because it sounds pretty cutting edge what they're doing.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. That'll give you 20% off your first order. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com.
Now, when it comes to another area that I really want to learn a little bit more about, like I touched on, for example, biofilm and stevia, biofilm, you could probably define that a little bit better than I could. And I feel like maybe you should for the purposes of some of the ways you treat the gut. But a lot of people have gut issues, a lot of people. And as a result, also have brain issues and sleep issues and just life issues based on what's going on in their gut. So when somebody comes to you with gut issues, I know that you have kind of a pretty comprehensive protocol that you dive into. So what's your approach with the gut?
The gut's like the most important thing to me to fix, because it's where most of your immune system is centered. And so regardless of whether you're a biohacker or somebody with the worst case of Lyme, if you don't fix the gut, you're not going to be able to fix everything else. And if things are going on in terms of problems in the gut, then it often starts to influence the brain. And then things start to go downhill from there. And so in terms of treating the gut, I try to get a sense of what's going on. And so I talk to people and try to get a sense of their symptoms. We do a lot of testing. So we'll test for parasites, we'll test the microbiome, will do actually like take a stool sample, and I have a pathologist that will actually look at it under it with a microscope to look and actually see if there's any parasites or worms.
So this is different than a microbiome analysis, like you get it at
Viome. He'll actually look at it, and he'll see if there's any protozoans, if there's any metazoans. Will tell
it's a
us
fun
if,
job.
If there's exactly
a poop looker,
Candida. And so then after sort of trying to take a full assessment, a lot of times we'll do a something called a breath test where we look to see if somebody has SIBO.
Mm-hmm.
This will be kind of interesting because I tell a lot of people this. The small intestine, so when you eat, food goes down your esophagus, goes to your stomach, and then it goes to the small intestine. Now, the small intestine is sterile. Nothing is in there. And then the digestive juices are put into there from the liver, and then the food starts to get digested, and it goes all the way through the whole small intestine, and then it goes into the large intestine. Once it gets into the large intestine, then there's trillions and trillions of bacteria there. So small intestine, nobody's there.
That confuses a lot of people who take a probiotic, and like they just visualize it going into their gut somewhere, but it has to go stomach, through the small intestine, somehow make its way into the large intestine intact, having survived the acidic nature that it came through to get there, and then populate the large intestine after it passes through all that stuff you've just described.
Exactly. So then imagine, let's say that somebody, you know, they go on vacation and then they pick up a parasite. And so because of that parasite, the parasites live in the small intestine. And so the parasite starts to live there, and it starts to secrete. Have you ever seen like at the edge of a pond? It's almost like that kind of collagenous scum type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the parasites will start to secrete a little film there called a biofilm. Now, that could be caused by parasites, or it could be caused by candida that are living there. They're not supposed to be living there. Or some bacteria from the colon could decide to take a little bit of a road trip and come all the way up, and they start living in the small intestine.
It's kind of vague. They would describe to take a road trip. Like, is there an actual trigger for them to do so?
So a trigger could be inflammation.
Okay.
If your GI system isn't working, then people are more likely to have that happen.
Okay.
And when I say take a road trip, and so they come up, and now I have bacteria from the colon living in the gut, that's called SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah, I've talked a little bit with actually a guy from your neck of the woods, Dr. Michael Ruscio. He wrote a book called Healthy Gut, Healthy You, and we talked a little bit about SIBO on the show.
Right. So now, if you imagine sort of a full constellation of small intestinal problems. And so then the idea is that first of all, you have to figure out what's going on. And then depending on what you have to deal with, then creating sort of a coherent plan to fix that. There's a lot of stuff that you can do from the biohacking side in terms of going on a anti-inflammatory diet and trying to heal the inflammation of the gut. We have a product that has immunoglobulins that are from cows, actually, and they bind onto toxins. They bind onto C. diff. They bind onto bacterial cell walls. And so we give this powder, and then we give colostrum. And so
I was going to say, I take colostrum, and it does some of the same things. It has immunoglobulins in it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then we do a lot of that stuff to try to move all the way that stuff out. We use biofilm busters to try to break that biofilm down. And then it's interesting, like I had a woman who came to see me that had diarrhea for 36 years. And so I started her on biofilm busters, started treating her for about like a year. And I was making slow, steady progress, up, down, up, down. And then I found out about 2 weeks ago that she finally started to release the biofilms. And she just said huge mucusy things were coming out every day. She's been sending pictures to us.
Holy cow.
And so,
what's a biofilm buster?
Well, there's different products that are herbal products and herbal basically concoctions that help to break down those collagenous structures where all of these different organisms are living. And another one to remember that can live in there that is a nightmare is mold.
Yeah.
Because if you're in that, and what happens is these things are cumulative. Often they're going on for years and years and years. And then you've got a girl that's been, you know, overall pretty healthy and not too many symptoms. And then she goes, I just had this case, and moves into a super moldy apartment. And so then now you're breathing mold right above your bed and you're breathing it all night. And then some of that comes in and then it starts to live in the biofilm and then secrete mycotoxins.
Yeah.
So it's like,
when it comes to mold and mycotoxins, a lot of people think you just switch to a mold free diet, but I mean that stuff just pretty much will live in there forever until you knock it out. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So are there any other things that you do when it comes to the gut besides this process of testing stool? One thing I actually did want to ask you was the mold and mycotoxin piece with this stool analysis and your official stool inspector who you have looking over people's poop. From what I understand, like mold and mycotoxin, usually you'd look for that with like a urinary analysis or something like that.
Right. So they're all sort of living in that same spot, but you're not going to see the mold come out on the other side. So the mold, we do a urine test with a couple different companies. We do essentially almost all herbal approaches to fixing sort of the gut, because the issue is there's antibiotics that you can take like rifaximin, but if they work, often it's amazing. But if they don't work, a lot of times it rebounds worse than it ever was. And so our concept is to break down the biofilms, do a different sort of concoctions of herbals. And I typically will have a long-term herbal protocol that's punctuated with surges that we put on top of that. You can do things like rectal ozone and ozone therapy to help to reset. There's the entire constellation of prebiotics and probiotics to begin to support and reset what's going on in the gut as well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of people will have developed food allergies as a consequence of these things. And so then you can test for those and then try to eliminate the foods that you're found to be allergic to. Alternatively, if you don't have the wherewithal to do that, then you can go on anti-inflammatory diets and, you know, sort of do your best. And then in terms of healing the gut, things like collagen, bone broth. So like I'm a huge believer in bone broth.
Glutamine, colostrum too.
Glutamine, yes. And I always combine glutamine with the SBI Protect, the immunoglobulins. And so basically putting together sort of an entourage of everything that you need to heal the gut and reset it. And then interestingly, that's why I called my company BioReset. Every system in the body, once you reset it, it typically goes back to acting normal.
Yeah. Like we were talking about at dinner last night, everything is fixable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like your approach with everything. You look at somebody and you're like, hey, that's fixable. And I want to talk about that in Lyme too, in a little bit. I had one other question for you that related to the gut and the biofilm. And that would be the use of antibiotics. And, you know, we were talking about off-label uses of things like beta blockers, right, for athletes. But another one that we were talking about was the Z-Pak, which, of course, is vilified in the wellness industry as, you know, a way to press the nuke button on all the good bacteria in your gut. But you were telling me about a very interesting off-label use for the Z-Pak, the antibiotic that you've discovered.
So there's some evidence that azithromycin has the ability to affect senescence and basically help take senescent cells out of circulation. Now, that term senescence is really interesting because we have a bunch of cells that are floating around in our bloodstream, and some of those are active, and then some of them quit doing their job and they become senescent. Now, the older that we get, more and more of our immune system becomes senescent, and it's that may be one of the most important reasons why we age.
But you want a certain amount of senescence, right? You don't want to kill all your senescent cells?
Right, but we generally probably have too much.
Okay.
And so then a lot of modalities have the effect of decreasing senescence. And so, this just kind of came up for us like a couple weeks ago. And then this famous cell biologist, as a friend of mine, texted me and said he needed a prescription for azithromycin. And I texted him back and I said, "Are you sick or senescent?" And he laughed and he said both.
You knew already that there could be a use for this. But of course, I would say that that's something you'd want to proceed with caution with. There's other ways to reduce senescent cells without necessarily affecting your gut bacteria, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like quercetin is really good for senescence. Yeah. And I think that antibiotics are like vastly overused. And so I think we want to shift away on the spectrum from antibiotics as much as possible, although they've certainly been good to us over the years.
What about peptides? Do you use peptides? Because when we were at that A4M, for those of you listening, there's this big conference in Las Vegas every year. It's called A4M, the American... What does it stand for? The American Academy of Anti-Aging?
Yeah, American Society for Anti-Aging, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And anyways, like everybody and their dog was showcasing Sumerolin and Nipamorlin and BPC-157 and TB and cerebral lysine and the one that gives you boners and a tan. What's that one? Melanotan. Like peptides are just all over the place. It seems to me like we're probably going to see those. Somebody sent me a bottle a few weeks ago. I think I was telling you this of like a tablet form of BPC-157 that you can take orally. So what's your take on peptides? You use those?
Yeah. So, and I've been using the oral version of that.
Of BPC-157.
So it stands for Body Protection Compound 157.
Yeah.
And it's a peptide is a shorter version of a protein.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a protein is something like the size of a dump truck, and the peptide might be like the wheel on that dump truck. So it's a small segment of it. But it still might be able to have much of the same function of the bigger protein. And BPC-157, I think, is the most interesting one because it helps almost any tissue system heal.
Yeah. I mean, it's found naturally in the gastric mucosa of humans, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the protein that it was developed from, BPC-157. And so I'm using it in combination with stem cells, but I forgot to mention I'm using it for everybody now with GI problems because I'm using it for its ability to begin to help heal leaky gut. And so I think that one is super sort of interesting. And I know of no side effects. Like I know of hundreds of people that have been working with lots of people using BPC-157. And so I think that one's going to be over the long term, just based on sort of the clinical experience that I have so far, a very safe peptide for people to be working with.
Yeah, a lot of folks who are just kind of like cowboying their own injury management at home, they'll get BPC-157 and then this other peptide called TB-500. And the BPC seems to act more on the inflammatory pathways and the TB-500 on like the actin and myosin fibers. So you can kind of come at an injury from two different standpoints. And they'll just like, you get those in insulin syringes and you can just inject subcutaneously around the joint. And that's very efficacious for a lot of people.
Right, right. Yeah, I know. I loved that you told me that because it was like opened my mind up to like a whole like new way of... When I started the practice of medicine, patients were profoundly not empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And then, with the internet,
now they've got Bitcoin and the dark web, and they can get anything.
Exactly. And we empowered them with the internet, but now people are actually beginning to take sort of matters into their own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, you're doing a lot of the same thing. So when I'm doing a hydrodissection procedure now, so where I'm treating a nerve and potentially even doing ultrasound guided therapy into a joint, then I'll give them a bottle of the BPC-157. So I'm trying to do basically the same thing that you're doing, And the synergy is sort of in that sort of doctor patient relationship, and what's happening is a lot of great things are coming that I think are going to help people be healthier.
Yeah. Are there any other peptides that you think are quite notable right now aside from BPC?
Well, you know, epithalamin is interesting because it appears to increase the length of telomeres, but it also seems to affect the hormonal system. And then TB500 is a segment of thymosin. And so, and there are a variety of different peptides that are thymosin related, thymosin alpha one, thymosin beta, and they have quite a bit of potential to help with chronic infections. So, I've been using the thymosin peptides for people with chronic infections, and almost everybody in the space has migrated to adopting peptides as part of their is the part of the milieu of their treatment algorithms.
Yeah,
and then you can think of sort of different components, and then we're going to get better and better and better. So I've got the anti-inflammatory component with like BPC-157. I've got a hormonal effect and kind of lengthening telomeres. I've got with epithalamin, and then I've got with thymosin, I've got the ability to have an effect of sort of stimulating or potentially modulating immune and immune response. And in so many sort of modern conditions have an aspect of immune over-response or immune under-response. And so the concept of immune modulation and many, many therapies work towards affecting immune modulation in terms of balancing the effect of the immune response. And really, we want a balanced and sort of rational approach from the perspective of our body to any problem.
Yeah, it's really interesting how these can be stacked. One of my friends emailed me, this was like 2 days ago, and he was like, what do you think about this stack? And it was ipamorelin for growth hormone, tesamorelin for cognitive functioning, CJC-1275 as a muscle builder and fat burner, and then AOD-906 as a fat burner and energy enhancer, DSIP for deep sleep enhancement, and then BPC-157. And this is what his physician, it was a functional medicine doc, had prescribed to him as his stack. And I just find it fascinating how we can use peptides in so many different ways now to address all these different variables. And compared to, you know, another big one that's similar to peptides has been popular in the bodybuilding industry are these selective androgen receptor modulators or SARMs, but peptides appear to be far more safe, result in far less neuroendocrine imbalances, something like a SARMs.
Exactly. And then also there's a sort of a whole category of sort of new nootropic peptides like CMAC and C-Lance.
Cerebrolysine.
Yeah, and we're looking at those for things like concussion and traumatic brain injury. And then imagine stacks where you begin to do sort of complex things like plasmapheresis to sort of purify the blood, and then combining that with peptides, combining that with healing the gut, and then sort of taking a fairly comprehensive approach to any one problem.
It's like the doctor of the future, baby.
That's crazy.
So another thing, and then I want to address Lyme, but there was one other thing that you were telling me about that I found intriguing, and it might be even something you've used in some of your Lyme therapies, and that's hyperthermia. Hyperthermia. Can you explain what that is and where that would fit in?
So hyperthermia is not an FDA-approved therapy, whole body hyperthermia, but it's something that we've been studying for quite a while, and I'm in the middle of like a 3-year program to starting a clinical trial outside of the United States looking at hyperthermia. And it's the main areas where people are studying hyperthermia is actually for treating chronic infections and then cancer.
Yeah. I mean, I have a biomat from where those made Korea or something like that up in my bed. I nap on it every day. But when you get it and you open the manual, I mean, that's one of the main things they start to pull out is all the research on hyperthermia and cancer. And I actually know a lot of cancer patients who have purchased just that alone, like a biomat and they'll wrap themselves in Mylar blankets and get a sweat and get the infrared therapy and the heat all at the same time. So, you know, again, kind of like a DIY cowboying form of hyperthermia. I just wasn't sure how I was using like a clinical setting.
So the clinical setting is there's a couple different ways to do it, and we're looking at both. So imagine a super high-tech sauna that warms you up. And then the other one is that we do is called vena venous hyperthermia. And so we take blood out from the body, and then we run it through basically the same a warmer that's like the same thing that I used to use when I used to do open heart surgery. And so we warm the instead of cooling the blood down, we warm it up. And so then we put it back in. And so that's called vena venous hyperthermia. And okay. So then basically what happens is we give sedation and then we warm the body up to 107 degrees, okay, or 42 degrees Celsius. And the concept is the cancer can't live at that temperature, and neither can a lot of the infections that people are dealing with, including spirochetes. And there's a real sort of entertaining story about the history of hyperthermia that I could go into.
Yeah.
But the idea is you warm them up, and then the things that can't live then start to die, or they become weakened, and so they become much more sensitive to other therapies that we give.
That's interesting. The deal with hyperthermia is kind of related to what I was discussing when I had Dr. Thomas Cowan on my show, and how much of an error he thinks it is to, whenever someone gets sick and comes down with a fever, do everything that you can to get rid of the fever, because that's the body's own built-in version of hyperthermia.
Right. Yeah. And so the story is a crazy story.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
So imagine, you know, the 1800s, early 1900s, there's no antibiotics. So if you got an infection, it was like a disaster. Okay. And so syphilis was a disaster in Europe. And what would happen is a lot of people would get it, and then it would progress to something called neurosyphilis, and people would become partially paralyzed and they would become psychotic. And wow. There was no way to treat this. And so there was this guy, and he's a psychiatrist, and he's in kind of the school of thought that, you know, he's German. And so the idea is either you think that it's your problems are psychological, it was your mother, or you think that it's physiological. And so he's in this group. And so then what he does is he's very young, in like the late 1890s. And he sees this woman, and she gets a skin infection. And so as a result of the skin infection, she becomes super like high febrile and gets really sick and almost dies. But then her neurosyphilis just like totally goes away. And so then, and you know, I had things like this, you know, happen to me when I was young, and it becomes very influential on you. And so you're always like looking at those early cases and like thinking about it. So then he proceeds to try to treat people with infections for like the next 20 years. And he treated them with like typhoid and all kinds of things. And so then eventually somebody accidentally got admitted to his sanitarium,
right,
that had malaria that had come back from the war. And so they were like, can we treat him with quinine? And he goes, no. So then he isolates this guy's plasma when he was having a fever, and then he infected a bunch of the patients there. I mean, so this is like, wow, definitely like before the Geneva Convention also.
And yeah.
This guy was a little controversial. So
no kidding.
But then some of them get all the way better. And then afterwards, he cures them all of their malaria with quinine.
Holy cow.
And so then he ends up treating like a series of 9 people, and a bunch of them actually like totally just go back to living like their normal life. And nobody had ever had that kind of result, and it was repeated by some other people, and it was called malariotherapy, and he ends up winning a Nobel Prize in like 1928. So it's sort of, this is the foundation of the idea of using a fever to try to treat people. And it's very interesting in both the cancer side and the infectious disease side.
That's interesting. You know, that you and I were talking about this detox retreat that I'm leading over in Switzerland at one of these the Paracelsus clinic in the Swiss Alps, and I think hyperthermia is one of the things they do over there. I believe it's more readily available in Europe.
Exactly. Yeah, I talked to like two people who were going on the trip with you.
That's going to be an interesting job. I think it's full for people listening in. I'll put a link in the show notes just in case. But yeah, it's like we're just going to go to Switzerland and reboot our bodies and hike in the Alps.
And where, like, I have a guy like that is like had like metastatic to his bones, prostate cancer, and both was told by his urologist here in San Francisco, like super high end urologist, well, it's like over, and he went to Germany twice, and I just saw him for back pain. And we got a PET CT to make sure that the back pain wasn't because the cancer had come back, and the cancer is totally gone and is a PSA zero. And so it's super sort of exciting, the idea. And that's why we're starting these clinical trials so that people don't have to go all the way to Europe. And we can basically, because I do almost everything that they do over there, but this is one thing that I've got to do outside of the country.
Yeah. That's all bullshit, man. That whole you can cure cancer stuff and cancer is fixable. Like, you can get laughed at by the medical community. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious.
It's a journey. The cancer, it's interesting. I always say, I don't even really ever talk about cancer because, like, if you're helping people with Lyme disease, nobody really cares because they're either really happy you're helping them or they don't believe Lyme disease exists. So either way, they're kind of neutral to you.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Lyme disease. So thank you for that perfect segue into Lyme disease, which is very complex. And I know it's also something that you've worked with successfully with a lot of patients. So I'd love to hear, you know, kind of similar to like your approach to the gut, what your approach to Lyme would be.
So the approach to Lyme is similar to the gut. First of all, we do a lot of testing and interestingly, Lyme is a tick-borne illness. And so there's a whole bunch of, it's like a gang. So there's this one, bacteria that's the main bacteria that causes Lyme disease, and it's called Borrelia. And so it's a spirochete like syphilis. And so it has a lot of sort of crazy effects like syphilis and also can be real hard to diagnose like syphilis. And so both conditions have been called the great masquerader. The interesting thing is syphilis just was like one thing. If you had syphilis, you had syphilis. With Lyme disease, there's a parasite called Babesia. And then there's a whole bunch of other things, Bartonella, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia. There's some viruses that seem to go with it. And then there's often a susceptibility to other problems. So a lot of people with Lyme disease actually have mold. A lot of them have biofilms and a lot of them have mold in their biofilms. And so then what I'm trying to do before I go into treating is stepping back and trying at the broadest possible level, trying to say, of all of those things, what do they have? Do they have a lot of food allergies? And then within that, do they have pain? A lot of people have pain, and then sometimes that's in their joints. And so I do diagnostic ultrasound to look in their joints and see if they have fluid in their joints. A lot of people have more a neuro Lyme, and a lot of them have concomitant viral infections. And so the beginning is sort of like doing this full assessment. We do a bunch of questionnaires and then try to really establish where we are as before we kind of go on.
What modalities have you found to be relatively successful with Lyme?
So then it sort of goes... At a broad level, once we do the full assessment, then I start people on like a year-long or two-year or three-year-long journey.
Wow.
Where I start them on herbal antimicrobials, and I tailor that towards what they have. And so now I'm going to just start chipping away with herbals that are going to start to break and fight. These are tailored specifically. So if you've got Bartonella, I've got one for that. If you've got Boreal, I've got one for that. So I do that. I do the whole gut thing. So we're trying to break down the biofilms and make sure that there's, because if you don't fix the gut, then you can't reset the immune system and get everything else working.
So some of this stuff goes in conjunction with what you've already explained regarding your treatment with the gut.
Exactly. And we're putting almost everybody on peptides. Then I do a lot of IV therapy. So I use IVNAD, which is great for sort of like biohackers, but a lot of times seems to sort of reset the mitochondria and turn on the ability of the immune system to start to fight.
Yeah. We talked about that in the last podcast, how you combine that with things like quercetin for senescent cells or even you have like a cocktail you do pre-ketamine as well.
So I do that for the Lyme people. Uh-huh. But interestingly, it depends because we should almost stage Lyme in like, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, because if you said stage four was the worst, I have to be real careful with them, because if you give them NAD and it starts to turn their immune system on, a lot of times it's too much. And so I have a little bit of a start low, go slow, where I layer on the herbals, I layer on sort of the fixing the gut. I start with IV therapy to kind of begin to kind of reset and heal things and sort of get that working. If they've got pain, I'll do ketamine. If they haven't in the joint infections, Lyme people tend to respond really well to ozone and placental matrix injections into the joint. And because ozone's antiviral, antibacterial, antiparasitic, and then interestingly, the super off label, but there's IV ozone, and that's something that's done a lot in Germany, and they're studying both IV ozone and rectal ozone to treat Lyme disease.
Wow,
which is super interesting. We like to use the peptides to try to treat it, and then. And to me, probably by far the most interesting thing on sort of the Lyme front is the regenerative medicine applications for Lyme. And so in the first podcast, we talked a lot about exosomes.
Yes.
And I personally think in the future, probably there's going to be 10 exosome treatments for every one stem cell treatment, because exosomes are kind of all the benefits of a stem cell without a stem cell. And so I've been doing work treating Lyme patients with exosomes, and that's been a profoundly positive experience.
Like injecting them?
IV.
Or intravenous exosomes.
Intravenous.
Okay, yeah.
And so...
I've had that before.
Yeah.
It's Dr. Harry Edelson.
Oh, great. Yeah. I like him. Yeah. He's a fantastic doctor, and I went to his clinic. I was really great, really impressed.
Park City. Yeah, that's where I did the full body stem cell makeover that he does.
Right.
Not inexpensive, but if you just want to do everything, that's where to go.
Yeah, it definitely is. And then if you imagine that the IV exosomes that he gave you have an effect of modulating. So I'm going back to this concept of modulating your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they seem to kind of modulate the immune system and have a very profound anti-inflammatory effect. And so there's this initial effect that happens that's short term, that's from the effect of the anti-inflammatory effect and potentially a little bit of immune modulation. But then there's a longer term sort of 3 to 6 month effect that comes from an epigenetic and then the immune modulating effects of that. And so then what we're doing is we're doing a series of therapies with those. But the key to me is that those treatments are resting on top of a real coherent, long-term comprehensive plan, and a long-term comprehensive plan both to reset and heal the immune system, what you're fighting, and the gut. And then so then there's a lot of people that have been doing stem cell therapy for Lyme. I've done that, and I feel that it's a good idea. The conventional sort of wisdom in the Lyme community is, if you have somebody who's 20% better, don't give them stem cells, because this is probably not going to work. If they're 70 or 80% better, a lot of times people do real well with stem cells. My feeling is that sort of no matter where you are, you got to do a complex thing, comprehensive care, layer in exosomes, and then I'll sort of go to stem cells next. And then, we're going to start a clinical trial looking at, culture expanded natural killer cells.
That's the one in Mexico that we talked about in the last show.
Yeah. That's another one in Mexico, but, that one is where we take your own, blood and then grow natural killer cells. Now, interestingly, there's a little theme running through this conversation of things that are good for cancer and also good for infections. Mm-hmm. So it's always nice if you treat someone for an infection, but it has a side effect of having an anti-cancer.
Absolutely.
And so on the, with the killer cells, there's actually several clinical trials going on right now looking at using culture expanded natural killer cells to treat like colon cancer, for example. And I'm referring people into that trial. And so, and they're giving people a series of these therapies. I personally think that in sort of the next decade, it has amazing effects, but it's going to be a while before regulatory wise that comes on board.
Mm. Interesting. There's a lot of stuff. And I think especially a lot of like physicians and healthcare practitioners listening in, these are things they may not have been exposed to before. And I know that you help people walk through this, like especially healthcare practitioners in terms of learning how to use and how to do some of the stuff that you're talking about. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh yeah. So, we created something called the BioReset Network, and you came down to the office. We actually built out
it's a cool office,
an entire training center,
like a whole like sound healing area and yoga room.
Yeah. So the yoga room, because it's hilarious, because Barb calls that the yoga room, but I call that our teaching center.
Okay.
Because we have people come in almost every week to sort of be trained in a lot of these techniques and strategies. And so, we built it both for sort of to do therapeutic movement and yoga and stuff like that, but to teach people. And so if you're interested, definitely check out the website, and we would be delighted to have you join us. And
that's just the normal BioReset Medical website.
No, like, that's BioResetNetwork.com.
I'll find it. I'll link to it in the show notes for people over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/BioReset2. And you teach. The other thing I know that you're big on, and that you're like one of the guys, one of the main guys in the country who teaches this, is like the acoustic sound wave therapy, the Gainswave stuff.
Oh, yeah. So we're a teaching center for them and for the O-Shot, P-Shot as well.
And what's the gains enhancement thing you were telling me about?
Oh, so I'm working with them on developing a technology where we take stem cell technology, i.e. exosomes, and then combine that with platelet therapy as an upgraded ability to do an injection into the penis for rejuvenation.
I've done that too. That actually works really well.
It works amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think actually at the same time I did Harry Adler, he had me out for like 4 hours on that table. So I think everything known to man that you could do with stem cells legally, they did.
That's awesome.
Very interesting. Okay. So what I'm going to do is, for those of you listening in, again, I'll link to the first episode that we did, or you could just go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/BioReset if you want to go listen to that first episode. This episode is at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/BioReset2. The only thing that I have left to do really is figure out what else I'm going to beat Dr. Cook up with today. We could do snow angels. You need to experience what my children call sugar cookies, which is where you get in the sauna and you like heat up in the sauna, hang out with your buddies, whatever. And then you run through the snow in your bare feet out to the cold pool. You take a dip in the cold pool, and then you get in the hot tub, and then you go to the snow and you make snow angels. In the snow, or you roll down the hill in the snow, so you're just covered in snow. Then you get out of the snow and you go back and you sit in the hot tub and you get like pins and needles and this huge release of nitric oxide, and you do a couple rounds of that, and you'll feel amazing. You'll sleep like a baby tonight.
I'm down. Yeah, I feel amazing, because I grew up about 3 hours from here in the Rocky Mountains. Missoula, yeah. So I feel like I'm coming home.
Yeah, that's right, baby. Home that involves running outside in your underwear in the snow and playing like a little kid. So we'll do that. We'll have an amazing dinner. And for those of you who want to learn more about Matt and what he does, go see him in San Jose. I'll put a link in the show notes. Also, if you're a physician, practitioner who wants to kind of soak up his body of knowledge, look into his physician training program. And Matt, thanks for banging out round two with me, man.
Thanks so much.
Want more? Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com, where you can subscribe to my information-packed and entertaining newsletter, and click the link up on the right-hand side of that webpage that says Ben Recommends, where you'll see a full list of everything I've ever recommended to enhance your body and your brain. Finally, to get your hands on all of the unique supplement formulations that I personally develop, you can visit the website of my company, Kion, at getkion.com. That's getkion.com.